All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry and I get to be your host today. I'm a former CW-2 helicopter pilot in the United States Army in Vietnam, 1969. Holy mackerel. We're going to be talking about the VA today, and I've got my experts in the studio and on the phone, and we're going to be answering some of your questions about benefits and also some of the things that are going on with the veterans' health situation out there. If you've been paying attention and reading the news over the last couple of weeks, it's getting pretty contentious down there in Washington, and so we want to take care of those issues too. If you want to get in on the conversation, please give us a call here at Veterans Radio. The number is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. Joining me on the line right now actually is a public relations officer from the Ann Arbor VA, and that is Brian Hayes. And Brian, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Hiya, Dale. It's great to be back.
Thank you very much for coming on the program. How are things going with the Ann Arbor VA?
Well, there's all kinds of great things happening right now with the Ann Arbor VA. As you guys probably already know, we got our new director this week. Everybody's really excited about that. Dr. Ginny Kreisman just started.
Okay.
She took over as director, as the responsibilities of director last Sunday. And, it's just been great. Now, a lot of you might remember she was here a few years ago. She used to be the assistant director at the hospital.
She went on
to become the associate director down in, Indy, and then the director of Saginaw. And now she's back here in Ann Arbor as the director.
All right. Well, it sounds like she's got a lot of experience then. That's always helpful.
Hello?
I said did you hear me?
No, I hear you now.
Okay. It sounds like she has a lot of experience then, and that's what we need, I think, in the future here.
I think so, too. And she's got a lot of experience in this healthcare system, which is really terrific. She already knows, of the hospital. She knows the layout. For the most part, our hospital has grown quite a bit. Even in the last 4 years, we've got a different footprint than we had just 4 years ago. But even still, she's familiar with the area. She knows Ann Arbor. She knows the veterans in Ann Arbor. So we're really super excited that Dr. Kreisman is in charge.
So, all right. So now she's new. I think you may have to take that over. I'm trying to get a phone number into the control room here. It's okay. It just went crazy. I was trying to make some a CD of music and it wouldn't do it. So everything
I've been there.
Everything that was so well planned over the weekend is now gone. So
well, the best laid plans of mice and men.
Absolutely. So as relaxed as I was earlier on today, and I'm kind of at my max stress level. But other than that,
I know the feeling. I was a radio disc jockey for 23 years before I came into public affairs. So I know the stress of trying to get a pretty decent radio show on the air.
There you go. Hey, by the way, come on down. We're always looking for co-hosts or contributors and everything else.
I'm not sure if Dr. Kreisman will let me moonlight, but we'll see.
Hey, why not? So she's in place now. What else is happening?
Tons of construction going on, and probably, and as you guys know, when you come in the main hospital there, the front, the Welcome Center, has come along so fast during the winter, and we're still looking for that target opening date, probably in maybe May, for people actually using it, but the actual completion and, some of the finishing touches and stuff probably won't be completed until midsummer, and it's going to be just beautiful, and it's really organized, too, so all the veteran service officers and some of the veteran services like eligibility and, Benny Travel and all those things where you just kind of want to come in and get out really quick. All those services are going to be right up front in the hospital. So you don't have to traverse, all the hallways and elevators in the hospital just to get to see, your VSO on the sixth floor. You just see them right out front. So that's one of the nice things. But that will also allow us to kind of expand our primary care, which will increase access. Mm-hmm. And then later on down the road, we've actually if you come along the side of the hospital there, we used to call it the red awning. There was a big sort of addition to the hospital that was kind of a modular building. That's been torn off, and now construction is beginning for an addition to the hospital that is going to become our new outpatient pharmacy. We're going to have a nice big Starbucks area. We're adding two more floors of exam rooms. Oh, my gosh, it's insane. And it's going to just increase our access and our availability and ability to see veterans even faster. So we're super excited about that. And then where that current outpatient pharmacy is right now, there's a plan to get our women's clinic in there, a nice, big, beautiful clinic dedicated specifically to our women veterans. We're really excited about that. And all of this is happening, you know, between now and 5 years, you know.
Wow.
And check this out. You're going to love this, Dale. And we talked about it a little bit last time we chatted. But, you know, we got the funding last year to build a new community-based outpatient clinic. We got a new CBOC coming, and it's going to be part of the Ann Arbor healthcare system. And we were out just last week. I wasn't part of the team that went out, but part of our team went out just last week. We were scouting properties and locations to build this new clinic that's going to be about 38,000 square feet, and it's going to be somewhere around the Canton, Plymouth area, right along that 275, okay, that I-275 corridor. Mm-hmm. We're really excited about that. That's probably going to improve our ability to see veterans threefold, because right now, right around that area in that Wayne County area, we're seeing about 5,000 veterans, Canton, you know, Westland, Wayne, that area, Plymouth. We think we can see about 15,000 there. So that's probably the best news I've got right now. That's going to be huge.
That is huge. I mean, considering all the things that we're talking about with the changes, you know, that may come through for the VA as far as choice, you know, health choices that they want to offer to veterans and so on by providing them more opportunities. I know that I've been to the audiology clinic over on Packard here in Ann Arbor, and that's much more convenient.
It's beautiful.
I was in a clinic at the VA a couple of weeks ago, and it was all brand new.
Yeah.
It's going to
And I mean, you know, we've got our Green Road clinic too. We just moved dermatology and our sleep clinic out to the Green Road area, and that's been a hit. Everybody loves that because it's just beautiful and it's all state of the art. And Packard Road too. You can get in and out. You don't have to navigate a parking ramp or anything like that. All these things have been really positive. Plus we're running shuttles now, I think four times, even more times a day, back and forth between all these locations. So we're able to get our veterans back and forth between the hospital. Because oftentimes, you know how it is. You want to kill a couple of appointments in one day. So you might get an appointment in the hospital, and then you got to run over to Packard for a quick audiology appointment or something. So and we try to make that as easy as we can.
Well, it sounds like you're doing that, Brian, and we greatly appreciate it here, of course, here in the Ann Arbor area. And that goes down, that the Ann Arbor VA treats people as all the way down to Toledo, all the way up to Saginaw, all the way over to Detroit, and all the way over to Battle Creek. So
that's right.
And all points in between. So
we're the major, what's called a tertiary referral center. So all the really complicated healthcare issues that come up for our veterans are referred to our hospital. So we're receiving patients from Battle Creek, from Saginaw, some from Detroit, you know, a lot from Ohio. You know, all these other VAs in Michigan and in the area are sending patients to us. We get some even from, you know, as far as Cincinnati, Indianapolis, because we just have, we're called a 1A, which is a high complexity hospital. So we do lots of different treatments.
Well, I know I have a lot of friends in the local area who are very pleased with their care at the Ann Arbor VA, and it's unfortunate that it's not the same in all of the VAs across the country, and that's the project we have to work on next.
Right. Well, you know, the nice thing is that most VAs are great, but we do have, you know, there are pockets where improvements can be made, and I think that's being done. You know, we're following the Secretary's priorities. You know, he set priorities for us for improvement, and you know, modernization is one of those, and bringing the VA healthcare system into the 21st century and beyond.
Well, Brian, you've got your job cut out for you. Oh, I guess a quick plug here for Fisher House. How's that going?
Fisher House is going great. The plans are still with the architect, so we're still waiting for the Fisher House architect to get those plans drawn. I mean, you know, that's a long process, you know, designing and doing it based on the property size and all that. So once those plans come back, we'll probably know a little bit more. But as we know right now, we're still on target for an early spring, late winter, early spring of next year groundbreaking.
All right. Terrific. That's
super
great.
Excited.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're just super excited about that.
Thank you, Brian. mark it down in your calendar. We're going to try and do one of these benefit programs on the last Sunday of every month if we can future, because we've gotten such a great response from people. So we're going to do that as long as we can. So I want to thank you very much for being on the program, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate you coming on.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with Michael Smith and Carol Ann Falzone. We're going to be maybe taking some of your questions. We're going to be talking about what's going on in Washington as far as the VA and the Secretary of the VA and health choices and all kinds of different things. So if you want to give us a call, you can at 734-822-1600. Until we'll be right back after the break, you're listening to Veterans Radio. Our favorite military march is, of course, with Sousa right there. So we can't get enough of Sousa. For those that listened at the first part of the program, I had a little technical malfunction with some music that I wanted to use for the program. But we can always fall back on our main defense, our dependable John Philip Sousa there. All right. So in the studio with me right now is Michael Smith. And Michael is with the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Office. He is the executive director or director of that, whatever title you want to call him, as long as you don't call him, a nasty name. So, Michael, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Dale, thank you so much for having me back. It's always good to be on the air with you.
It is always fun. And joining me on the line from beautiful Florida is our senior officer of the day, Brigadier General Carol Ann Falzone, United States Air Force, retired and veterans advocate number one. So, Carol Ann, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Dale and Michael. It's great to be with you.
Thank you very much. As we heard from Brian Hayes from a local Ann Arbor VA, that they're doing so many things, at least in the Ann Arbor VA, to reach out to veterans. They're setting up clinics, around the area, and evidently they're building a brand new big facility over in the Canton area that they're hoping to. What did he say? 13,000 or 38,000, something like that. Amazing numbers that they thought that they'd be able to treat. to treat over there. The one thing I wanted to mention to you, and Carol Ann, I'll ask you first, is that you mentioned that we'd had the woman on our program talking about the Veterans Initiative. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think a lot of this, Dale, ties in. A year or two ago, matter of fact, Jim Falzone interviewed and I don't want to mess up her name. She was the CEO for Henry Ford, and Nancy happened to be the head appointed by the secretary of the VA to head up the commission to look at all the issues facing the VA. And that went on for a substantial period of time, and I wanted to say there was something like close to 30 recommendations. And I think the interesting piece for me, and Michael, I would love to hear your comments. Approximately 10 years ago, the VA was faced with some of the same issues, lack of space, accessibility, and at the time, Secretary Shinseki, and I thought he really advanced, General Shinseki advanced the VA in what his thinking was, out of the box. He was the presumptive thinker that said, if you were there, you don't have to prove it. And he started to look at contracting out. Instead of building brick and mortar and taking 5 years, I think what Brian was commenting on is awesome for services. However, if we utilize the access the way it should be and give the veterans a choice, you could go see your own private ophthalmologist, whatever, and be taken care of, audiologist, without going to always having to renovate, do brand new brick and mortar. That's where I'm having trouble with consistency, addressing some of these, the recommendations, some of them were awesome. But it seems like right now we're starting to access or put these in place, and then we stop and we go backwards. And so that's where I'm having the trouble with. We spent all this time to get the recommendations, and I don't see a plan. I don't know which way this secretary is going to execute that plan.
Well, I, from what I've been reading over the last week or so, it seems like they're getting mixed messages from various concerns, from Congress, from the president, from, you know, like they present an idea, and it seems like this is what's going to be, you know, going to happen next, and then somebody jumps up and says, no, we can't do that. We have to privatize the whole thing. And then somebody comes up, no, we don't want to privatize the whole thing. Let's just privatize some of it, or at least offer our veterans the opportunity to, as you mentioned, go to a clinic and, you know, have their bills sent to the VA. And
One of the sad things is, and once again, I think it really hits me in the face when they were realizing the traumatic brain injury, the PTSD, was the hallmark of global war on terrorism. Instead of reaching out, and Michigan offered, I mean, I know this for a fact. Mm-hmm. Michigan is one of the states that has 55, 56 CARF-accredited institutions. And they started to pick and choose to, you know, bring patients to only, I want to say, four or five locations around the country. They developed polytrauma centers, which, once again, brick and mortar, and that really delayed the process. Instead of saying to Michigan, all right, let's explore with you. You've got the great resources. Let's bring those veterans to Michigan. Now, we were fortunate. One place was selected for this entire region, and that was Eisenhower. But that is one place. I know of four or five around the country, but that's all. So it's happening very slowly, Dale. And, you know, I don't know who's leading this charge.
No, I don't either. And that's, I mean, in reading the articles, there's a group called Concerned Veterans for America that is out there that's got, you know, one view that, you know, they seem to be going for the entire privatization of the VA system. You've got the, the Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America, and they want to kind of have a sort of a hybrid of what's existing currently.
Sure.
And then you've got Congress that, you know, has a bipartisan agreement that says, okay, here's the plan we're going to, and then one guy jumps up and says, no, you can't do that. And you've got the secretary of the, you know, of the VA saying one thing, and then you've got the president's people saying another thing. And it's you know, and the people that are going to suffer, of course, are the veterans, because this indecision brings about a lot of unnecessary stress, I think.
Well, you think about the Commission on Care that was appointed after the Veterans Access, Choice, and Accountability Act of 2014, in which this commission was directed to be formed, and their specific duty was to examine the access of veterans to health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs and strategically examine how best to organize the Veterans Health Administration, locate health care resources, and deliver health care to veterans during the 20-year period beginning on the date of the enactment of this act. Part of that assessment that the Commission on Care, and this was a 15-member commission appointed by the president, had so many that he could appoint, members of Congress had so many that they could appoint, and eventually this 15-person commission started this analysis of the VA healthcare system with an independent assessment. The independent assessment then reported out to the commission, and the commission made some preliminary conclusions based on that, and then they issued a straw man report in March of 2016, and then they followed up with their final report to the president in July of 2016. And I think what we find here are some of the key players in that Commission on Care, especially Mr. Selnick, has had some influence on the president's understanding and formulation of VA policy and VA specifically, VA healthcare policy during his campaign. Once he took office, there were other players that were part of that commission, and these Concerned Veterans of America, this other group that's backed by the Cook brothers, and other concerned veterans that said, hey, listen, we need to incorporate into policy almost all these 18 recommendations or so that came from the Commission on Care. And as General Carol Ann Fasson's just pointedly stated, one of the things the commission found was, you know, look, we've already got capital that's depleting and needs repair. We need to build more capital. And one example was the facility that they built or were building or still being built outside of Colorado Springs, Colorado. By the time they got that project started, it was not going to have the capacity to see the veterans that they're going to need to see, meaning it was already going to be overcrowded. And then it was under budgeted, and they had to give more money to the project so that it could be completed. So these types of things in terms of brick and mortar, as the general mentioned, take a long time. And the commission said, hey, listen, when we looking forward 20 years, see the capital needs that we have, just the capital needs for the demand for services, brick and mortar is not where it's at. In terms of the facilities you've already got built that are going to need to be maintained and repaired, or those that you're going to need to build. And so that's why the CHOICE program became the predominant theme of the commission's conclusions. And they recommended that the VA, split in the VA, excuse me, the VA, the Health Administration, VHA, split into two separate administrations. One that would oversee the delivery of services and facilities that are currently existing, and then those that would then transition and be a part of getting veterans to transition their health care by choosing to get their health care on the outside, vetting providers, and basically setting up a system akin to Medicare, and then encouraging veterans to choose to get their health care out on the economy. And then as veterans transition away from VA facilities, then they would schedule those VA facilities for closure over a 20-year period of time.
Okay.
And eventually, I would assume that all veterans would be getting their health care out on the private economy. Now, I think what we see in terms of the secretary, here you have a doctor who was a doctor in the VA healthcare system, who's now the VA secretary, who wants to adamantly defend the system that's in place. And of course, he did that. Excuse me, former Secretary Robert McDonald, Bob McDonald, did that, as well as President Obama. And then they almost said, you know, we kind of agree with 16 or so of the recommendations, and we're actually already doing them. And now whether that's true or not, that's something to be seen. So when the new administration came in and they were looking to formulate policy, I think we see a lot of voices vying for the president's attention, a lot of voices trying to get this right for veterans. They know how crucial it is. And yet we also see a lot of entrenched bureaucracy, and we see a lot of entrenched advocates who think that there's only one way to do business. And I think that's what the president is up against right now, is trying to navigate all these folks, all these voices, all these recommendations, a Congress that really can't seem to get it together. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean, just at least on this issue, because of the different voices, again, vying for Congress's attention. And then you've got the secretary, who's got the present job of actually delivering services. And so it is making for a mess. I got an email. I've got remote access to the VA computing systems, and one of those is a VA Outlook account. And one of the things I saw in my inbox on Thursday was a statement to VA employees by the secretary apologizing for all this negative press and what he believes is something that's detracting from them to being able to deliver their services, and specifically to announce the retirement of one of these officials that you saw named in the newspaper article.
Yes, yes, I saw that, because unfortunately the secretary went to Wimbledon to watch a tennis match and took his wife with him. And, you know, this particular administration seems to have trouble with people going away on travel when they run into trouble. We've got about a little less than 2 minutes, and we have a caller that has a question on VA, and I'm going to ask him to hold on until we come back after the news. I hope he can do that for us. We're talking about what's going on with the VA and the VA health system, and those are really two separate entities. And we've had a lot of requests for information, which is why Michael and Carol Ann are here today, is hopefully to clear up some of the things that are going on out there. And we hope that it will answer questions for you as well. And so write down a number, 734-822-1600. We want to get you on the air and answer some of these questions. And I got a couple of emails this last week that was asking benefits questions as well, and I want to get those. So we're going to kind of go back and forth between the benefits question and what we think is going on at the VA and how we can solve this issue. Just the three of us, you know, we don't need 535 congressmen and senators to do it when we can take care of it right here, right now. And how are we doing on time there? Oh, well, it's on our way out. So we'll be right back after the news. You're listening to Veterans Radio. On Veterans Radio. Thank you very much, Derek, for finding that particular song. That was Michael J. Martin, by the way, and we have another song we're going to play of his later on in the program. In the studio with me right now is Michael Smith. He's the Washtenaw County Veterans Service Officer Director, and on the phone is Carol Ann Falzone, retired Air Force General and Veterans Advocate, and she's also affiliated with Legal Help for Veterans, which is a great organization. If your claims get denied, go to them. Maybe they might be able to help you. But we have two calls, which is kind of unusual here on Veterans Radio. People like to listen to the story. But I'm going to bring on Edward first because he's the one who's been on the longest. Edward, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so Edward, what's your issue?
Well, I have been represented by Legal Help for Veterans, James and Carol Farsone. And what's going on is they filed an appeal for me in March of 2015, and they filed it with the Veterans Appeal Board in Washington or whatever, and they responded, and they enumerated me for one of my claims, but then they remanded the remainder of the claims, back to Detroit. And they asked Detroit to take care of this expeditiously, and we haven't been able to get them to respond. They haven't called me in for any of the exams to examine my claim, my physical situations, and so therefore I just called in to find out what can be done to get them to respond more quickly. For example, they said in the remand that because of my age, I'll be 84 in April, that they should move very expeditiously on my appeals.
I haven't heard from
anybody in Detroit on those remands.
Okay, Carolyn, I'm going to ask you to address Edward's question if you can.
Sure, and good afternoon, Edward. You know,
hi, Carolyn.
I'm smiling, but I'm going to say I'm sorry, and Mike will understand this. I would love to see, and I could almost picture, your appeal in front of you. And because with the VA's process, what they now do is send it back to Detroit. That's Exactly correct. And depending on the date that they sent it back to Detroit, then Detroit starts to prioritize. And we could have sent in, and I'm sure we have, because I am once again smiling, and thank you for sharing your age. Beyond 75, they are supposed to expedite, and we probably have already sent multiple emails to get this remand looked at so that truly it could be expedited. Now, I'm sorry to say, and Mike, if you could help me out, Michael, expediting for them might be a year where it could have taken two or three. But what we will do is first thing tomorrow, I will go back in and try to find out where your remand is to get this expedited, the last piece of your puzzle.
Carol Ann, you're right.
I appreciate that. I think you know who I am, Carol, because you gave me an automobile.
I do know who you are. That was with...
you didn't give me an automobile.
I know that. That was the great project campaign that we had with Jack Demmer Ford, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Edward, for calling in, and we'll make sure that Carol Ann does check that out tomorrow morning for you, and
okay.
Let us know how that goes.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for calling into Veterans Radio. I've got another gentleman on the line. His name is Joseph, and Joseph, welcome to Veterans Radio. What can we do for you?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for letting me ask the question. I filed a claim about a year and a half ago, and it was denied, and a while after that, I was looking on my health net for some test results. I had a test done at the VA, and I never got a letter or anything. Usually they're pretty good about sending a letter and saying what the results were, and I didn't get anything. So I was looking through my health net, and I stumbled across the checklist that was used by the doctor that that worked my claim for the one that had been denied. So I started reading it, and on item number 10, it said that, has the veteran ever been hospitalized for the treatment of this condition? And it said no. Well, when I filed that claim, I had actually submitted the copies from the two different hospitals that I had been in for that particular condition. It also said that there was no official diagnosis for the condition, and there were in numerous places throughout my records an official diagnosis for this condition. It also says in the checklist that they did a complete review of my files and all of that. Well, and obviously that didn't happen because then they would have seen the review of the condition And obviously, they didn't even review the complete packet that I submitted, or they would have seen the hospital results. So my question is, do I have any recourse here? I mean, can I do anything about this, or what do I need to do? What can I do?
Joseph, yes, I would encourage you to definitely do a request for reconsideration if you're within 1 year of the decision, because if the VA then re-adjudicates the claim, that you will keep the same effective date as your original claim. If you're getting closer to that one-year mark, then I would encourage you to file a notice of disagreement with their decision and present to them the very evidence that you found in your record. Unfortunately, we've been experiencing this in Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs, where we go in to the Veterans Benefits Management System, which is the VA's electronic claims processing software, as well as their electronic records keeping system. And we review those disability benefits questionnaires, the DBQs. And I'll give you an example, and this is one of several. The veteran was service-connected for PTSD at 70%. The first question was, has this veteran ever been diagnosed with PTSD? And the doctor said no.
Yeah.
He was already service-connected for it at 70%. And in other instances, we had a veteran who was service-connected at 30% for traumatic brain injury, And in that questionnaire, it also asked, this is a different case where it asked, was this veteran or has this veteran ever been diagnosed with a TBI or does this veteran have a TBI? And the doctor checked the box no. And then if you look at the disability benefits questionnaire, I know exactly what you're talking about. It says, please check the boxes of the records that you read. CAPRI records are your VA treatment records. VBMS is the electronic records keeping system and processing system that the VA uses, and that's where all things are stored, including any evidence that you submit. And our conclusions were there's absolutely no way that doctor read these files and answered the way that they answered, because if they had read those files, they would have known that a veteran was diagnosed with TBI, that a veteran was service-connected for PTSD or any of the conditions for which we were requesting increases or service connection. So when you have issues like that with doctors not providing what we call a contemporaneous examination, then you just have to represent the information, the medical diagnoses, and contend with the denial on the basis that they stated. If they said, well, there's never been any diagnosis, then you submit that information where there was a diagnosis. If they say you were never hospitalized, then you resubmit that evidence that shows you were hospitalized.
How does he go about doing that? Joseph, where are you?
Where are you located, Joseph?
I'm in Jackson.
Jackson, okay. I know Dave Willihan is the director of the Jackson County Department of Veterans Affairs, mm-hmm. and he's affiliated with the American Legion. And so he probably had your claim represented by them. If a Legion service officer is out there, I would sit down with your veteran service officer and discuss these issues for a request for reconsideration or a notice of disagreement to start the appellate process.
Could you repeat his name again, David?
Willihan.
Willihan?
Mm-hmm. I believe okay. That's W-E-I-L-A-N-D.
Okay, thank you. I'll get in contact with him then. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for calling, Joseph. If you can't get through, call Michael.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, that's just a sample of the emails that we've gotten since we did the last program in January. And I really encourage you out there, if you do have a question, this is a place where you can get an answer to it or at least get pointed in the right direction.
Dale.
Yes, go ahead.
Dale, just a comment. I applaud Joseph and all the veterans out there that think that, okay, I'm going to put in a claim. How hard is this? I'll gather my records. I'll fill everything out, and I'll send it in. Okay, so here's a great example where he got a denial. Physicians going out there or the provider and filling in the boxes and whether for whatever reason, and Michael's correct, we're seeing so much of this. But then as it goes to a decision review officer, the hope is that somebody is reviewing the records and saying, oh, we've got other documentation. Let's go through the records. And I don't think that's happening either. There is not consistency. They're going through very quickly. And, you know, for the county counselors, our VSOs, Legal Help for Veterans, I mean, we go through this stuff very diligently. And I know Michael very well will pick up the phone and call, and I do that quite well to say, wait a minute, what the heck were you looking at when you made this decision, which enables us very quickly to put in a letter of reconsideration. So I really want to encourage all the veterans out there that really want to do this on their own, please, please go to a VSO, county counselor, somebody in your area, just maybe that has a little bit more experience that might be able to pick up one of these nuances and help you so that, you know, we could get this corrected a little quicker.
I got a phone call this week. Some people must think I'm a VSO now. I am not. I am not. But the gentleman had filed a claim electronically. The new 30-day magic carpet thing, treatment thing.
Yes.
And, of course, he'd gotten a rejection within the 30-day time limit, and he didn't know where to go. So you may be getting a call, either one of you or somebody out there will be getting a call. So, and I think I've talked with you about this, Caroline, that this is a way that they're trying to figure out how to speed up the system, but it's not proving to be quite effective.
No, because what even if the old system, and that's what we are calling all of our clients, our veterans, and saying, do not go into the new program, because then they're going to be pigeonholed in different areas, and you're going to be, I say pigeonholed, you're going to be boxed to go down another track. And, you know, it might seem a little quicker, maybe a year, 2 years, but what they're doing very quickly is deny, deny, deny. I don't know if you're seeing that out there, Michael, but that is my big concern.
Well, we definitely have a problem with e-benefits because as much as the VA wants to be veteran-friendly, they want to encourage veterans to engage them directly through their online resources like e-benefits, My Healthy Vet. The problem there is that veterans don't know 38 U.S. Code. They don't know 38 Code of Federal Regulation. They don't know the adjudication manuals and how VA employees on the receiving end of their claim are going to approach that claim, what the evidence requires. So you're right. E-benefits has created a lot of problems for us, especially when veterans want to get information on their claim and then they come to our office, and because they submitted their claims unrepresented, we have no access to the information.
Okay, you mentioned that to me one other time when we had a cup of coffee or something like that. If you file electronically and then you go to a VSO, the VSO is not going to be able to help you out right away.
Not right away.
But you'd have to do a change of representation.
That's correct. We'd have to do the appointment of a veterans representative, VA Form 21-22. Submit that to the VA and wait for them to update it. Turn on the access to us so that we can view the electronic record.
Okay, what did you call that form, Carolyn?
It's the 21-22A. It's the granting of the power of attorney, whether it's
okay.
A county council or a VSO, legal help for veterans, that needs to get in. And I think sometimes, our veterans don't realize this. We have this happen to us, that we get a client and then maybe they talk to Michael. They don't share with Michael that, you know, we have the POA. And so Michael very astutely says, here, I want to help you do the 21-22A. Well, you get multiple representatives. You're only allowed to have one representative at a time. And
right.
So then
I learned that
sort of slows down the system.
I learned that. So, I was trying to cover every base I could think of, but you can only have one VSO at a time out there, and you have to kind of start over again if you decide to move it on. So we want to make sure that those of you that are out there. I was looking around for the number of veterans that are out there, and you know the number is unfortunately going down now because I'm just looking at this newest number here. There's only 1,700,000 World War II veterans left. There's a 2.2 million Korean veterans, 7 million Vietnam veterans, but we're going away at about 700 a day, like everybody else. Desert Shield, Desert Storm is 2 million. The total wars, I don't have a number on Global War of Terror. Hold on. No number for that yet. But right now there's about 23 million veterans across the country, and this is a very large population that is aging and that needs help. And we can't afford to have all this infighting going on in Congress with the VA and the different organizations that are trying to, I don't know what they're trying to do. It just seems like, you know, if you made the promise of taking care of your veterans, then just take care of them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Dale, before the break, you said something very interesting. You have three veterans right here.
Yes.
And in some of these key positions running this system, you don't have veterans. Our secretary is not a veteran. Look at the majority of Congress. How many congressmen and women are out there that really understand what's happening to our veterans out in the field? That's really alarming or discouraging for me.
Well, I think it is, Carolyn, and I've noticed that there are many veterans that are running for political office this year. Especially, it seems like we're getting a lot of requests for donations from a lot of folks out there from both sides, which is great. And I think the idea of getting these veterans in there that that can, you know, that they understand. I mean, if we go back to, you know, the 60s, probably 80% of the members of Congress were World War II veterans, probably. And, you know, we've had that this void now where there haven't been that many in there. I mean, there have been three or four. You had, you know, Senator McCain, Kerry, and a couple of the other, both Kerrys and so forth. But there aren't that many. And so the people that are making these decisions, they don't have a clue of what it is that we're looking for. And trust me, folks, and when, you know, and all three of us can say the same thing. We're not looking for a handout at all. All we're looking for is that you made a promise that if we have some service-connected issue, that you're going to take help us take care of it. And that's all that we're asking. George Washington's the one that, you know, that said, if you don't treat your veterans right, you're not going to have any veterans. And so that's paraphrasing it dramatically. But the idea there is that, you know, if you make a promise that you're going to do this, you have to do that.
And you're right, Dale. The issue is consistency. And we understand because it's just the way our political system is set up. You have one president comes in, appoints new secretaries of all of the executive agencies and bureaus and commissions. But yet you would want some consistency in the way that you're delivering services to veterans, whether it be a VA processing of a VA home loan guarantee or the processing of a claim for disability compensation or going over and seeing a primary care physician and getting the type of health care that you would expect from a facility that touts itself to be the best created for veterans. Mm-hmm. And wanting that consistency, I don't think is an unreasonable desire.
That's all we need. You know, somebody fight the fight for us. You guys, I greatly appreciate it, and I'm finding myself becoming more and more involved in this struggle just to make sure that these young, I'm at that point in my life now, suddenly it said, these young men and women, you know, could deserve what they're entitled to. You know, these are not, you know, it's not welfare. These are entitlements. Just, you already paid the price for these benefits. And, you know, if they're going to change the whole system, it's like, you know, changing the rules of the game in the middle of the game is really not necessarily fair. I had a couple of other real quick questions for you both to listen in this. And, Michael, I'll ask this one. This is the gentleman that I know that had prostate cancer, 100% disabled. They removed the prostate, and they're going to reevaluate his claim.
That is correct. On any cancer, the VA has two ratings, either 100% or zero. And it's only when they know the cancer is terminal and that there are no recourses for treatment that they make the 100% permanent. So with those where there are treatment options and there's the potential or the possibility, the VA regulations and the law actually requires that the VA go in and look at the condition every 6 months. And with prostate cancer, there is a treatment option. And if the cancer is active or actively being treated, the VA awards the 100% rating. If the cancer resolves and on examination they find that the cancer has resolved, they will propose to reduce the rating to zero. But then they're obligated to rate the veteran on the residuals of the treatment. So typically with prostate cancer, we see the different conditions developing, such as erectile dysfunction, urinary infrequency, and avoiding dysfunction. And so the VA will take a look at that. I've seen veterans whose voiding dysfunction is at such a level and their urinary infrequency is at such a level that they will end up being reduced from 100 to 60. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they'll get what we call a K award, which is special monthly compensation for the loss or loss of use of a creative organ, because typically the treatment of the prostate will cause problems in that area for our male veterans.
Okay. Well, that was interesting. All right. I have another letter here. This guy, and it sounds like we've already touched on this probably, but he had 100% hearing loss for 9 years. He has documentation to the loss. A CUE, I don't know if it's a mistype or what it is, from the VA, a claim pending somewhere from in an audit. Is there anybody that can just help me get what is owed me?
Well, a CUE is actually a clear and unmistakable error. We refer to it as a Q.
Okay.
What that basically means is that somewhere the VA did not apply the facts of the law or the evidence of the record correctly, and once that error is found, Yes, the VA, if they granted benefits they denied on the former decision, and then later the veteran was granted, the issue now under a Q, or clear and unmistakable error, is the effective date. Meaning, if there's a clear and unmistakable error, the VA should go all the way back to the original date of claim to grant or award benefits. So that's probably why he believes he's owed retroactive payment for all those years based on his rating for his hearing loss.
Okay. Well, you know, this hour has flown by. Carol Ann and Michael, and I appreciate you both being on the program so much. Actually, we're going to go out on another Michael J. Martin song, which we just talked about, is Who's Going to Fight the Fight When the Last Warrior is Gone? And this goes to the Congress and to all the people out there, and especially to all the veterans. It's up to us to keep the fight going. And if we get apathetic and we don't call our congressmen, vote them out, vote them in, whatever it is, then it's our own fault. So remember, the last Sunday of every month, we're going to be talking to VA and disabilities. We want to encourage you to call us in and send us emails, and we'll be happy to try and answer your question or at least get you some more information. So I think I'm coming up on my time period right now. He's nodding his head in the control room. Michael Smith, thank you very much. Carol Ann Falcone, and thank you very much for being on the program. And we'll be back next week. And until then, you are dismissed.
Who's gonna fight the fight when the last warrior is gone? Who's gonna keep the pride? Who's gonna sing the war song? Who's gonna stand in the face of the slight? Who's gonna right all the wrong? Who's gonna fight the fight when the last warrior is gone? When it's down to the skin and the bones, and who's gonna call their bluff? Who's gonna take them all on? And when the world is rolled over with its belly up, nothing to compromise on. Who's gonna say enough is enough when the last warrior is gone? Who's gonna cross that line when the last line is finally drawn? And who's gonna keep on trying when they're claiming they've already won? And when there ain't no more freedom and there ain't no more rights, then it's down to defending all the wrong. Who's gonna lay down his life